welcome to the Own It podcast, where we celebrate the growing number of women and non-binary ad agency owners and talk about buying out of the Boys Club of Advertising one agency at a time. I'm Christy Heiler, owner of Cornette, and today we're talking to Kate Black and Susan Betteridge of Ponca. I so enjoy the stories of partnerships and co-ownership, so having Kate and Susan on the podcast was exciting. And their story of coming together to form Ponca is not your typical shared ownership story. In fact, Kate even said she didn't want to return to agency life after seeing the industry from the publishing side of the aisle, working at The Onion, of all places. Creativity brought her around, and Susan asked her to not work at the agency, but lead it. And of course, we talked about their ideas on closing the gender gap and agency ownership. You're really going to enjoy this conversation. So here it is, my conversation with Kate Black and Susan Betteridge from Ponca. Hi, Susan and Kate.
Hello. Hi.
I am so excited to have you both on the podcast today to hear each of your stories and your journeys to ownership, but also your shared journey, which I think is a little bit different than most. So I'm really excited to dig into that. But as I always do, I want to begin by hearing about each of you outside of the agency. Susan, you have a blog and are writing a memoir. Is that right?
I am. Well, it's on pause because, you know, I'm doing this other fun little thing called trying to run an agency and raise two toddlers. But yes, I am a writer at the core. It's one of the things I really love. I will get back to my memoir eventually, but it's on pause because, you know, I'm juggling a few things right now.
So kids, writing, agency, really like building the momentum of the agency. Okay, so that's where you are, Susan. Kate, what about you? Outside of the agency, what do you enjoy doing?
So I'm a Cancer, which means that I'm a homebody. And so really my family, my home is the center of everything. I have two boys, 7 and 9, that are an absolute handful. I have my husband and then my siblings, my mom, everyone is sort of in the Chicago area or close by. So that's really where my focus is, friends and family.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. Yeah. I love this question. And I think, Susan, I'd love to hear from you first, just knowing a little bit about what your memoir is about. But are there any women, past or present, that you've looked up to or that have really inspired you at certain points in your life?
Well, Christy, you've done your homework. I'm so impressed. I do genuinely have to say my mother. And I think that is something that I am kind of broaching in the memoir and we'll get back to. But really, she was a single mom. She was a social worker. So she like was making good and helping people in the community. And she did it. And she hustled and she figured out a way to get dinner on the table for the two of us at 5:30 almost every night. We always had dinner together, something I try to do now with my girls, although I'm only successful about 2 or 3 nights a week because it's hard. But my mom, I think she had a really devastating stroke in 2017. So she's now in a wheelchair. And I think that's challenging, but she's also mostly nonverbal. So her being nonverbal and probably one of the most prolific extroverts prior to the stroke that you can ever imagine. And then having to see her now not able to communicate, I look up to her. So she did it. She was a working mom before many in her generation were. She was the first one in her family to go to college. She had to kind of make a case to her father who said, well, why would you want to go to college? You know, just get married. She said, no, I want a career. I want a career first. So, you know, that wasn't customary in the early 60s. I think I'm thankful that it was a bit of a given for me to have that access and to really learn from someone who lived it firsthand. And yeah, now seeing her, she's come to peace and come to terms with, you know, being where she is in life. I think she's found humor. She's an awesome grandma to my little girls and they kind of speak the same language. If you imagine like toddlers learning to speak, they can just rap together. So it's fun to see her wisdom and grace in spite of everything. And then I have to say, go ahead. Yeah.
No, I was just thinking too about how much communication. And I see this so much in kids and in my kids, how much of communication isn't in words.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Thank goodness. Right. And we FaceTime, we only now FaceTime with grandma. because if it's on a phone, it's truly impossible. So charades is one of our favorite games to play with my mother. The girls love playing it. We kind of like joke, and we also practice it now on our own. Like we play like the Pictionary charades with the kids, cause they love it. But you're right. It's there's so much in terms of gestures and inflection and emotion and facial expressions. So that has been a bit of a saving grace for us in terms of the video nature of the way we can communicate even from afar.
And you were going to say maybe someone else?
Yes. I mean, it's so hard to narrow it down to, you know, there's great people. There's Michelle Obama and there's Oprah. And then I've also had a longstanding appreciation for Madonna. And I feel like poor Madonna, she gets so much flack these days. She was my muse when I was 8 years old, singing Borderline in my talent show in like, you know, second grade. But, you know, she is always reinventing herself. She's always relevant. She's unapologetic. She handles topics like aging that no one else wants to lean into. And I think that's really admirable.
I agree. That's a good one. All right, Kate, what about you?
I share Susan's sentiment about mothers. So my mom was in the advertising industry. My parents were divorced. And so, growing up with this woman who left for work every day and was in a senior global leadership position, there weren't a lot of people women in those roles. And I don't know, the thing about her is that she always created this sense of empathy, whether it was professionally or personally. And we have this joke among my friends and colleagues, she's Mama Duck, right? Whether you worked for her or whether you were one of my friends who was sitting in the kitchen too late at night, just like crying about boyfriends or whatever it was, like she was always there. And she put sort of the same, you know, the same thoughtfulness around who you were and what struggles you were dealing with, again, whether it was at work or it was at home or it was a personal life. And so I think it set me up for types of people that I responded to working for and working with. And I've had the pleasure and, you know, the luck of working for a series of really incredible women through my career, who each of them was very different, but they all taught me something so valuable about not being afraid to be the loudest person in the room, but also knowing when not to be, to understand that we don't live to work. We work to live, and that your priorities have to follow suit. To even the way that I problem solve, you know, I was working for Dana Anderson, who is the CMO for Mondelez at my last job. And I've always been the person who problem solves from how do you most efficiently get from A to B? And Dana taught me that sometimes you have to take a left and go off through the woods and explore a little bit and not go into things with hypotheses, but really open your mind and pull in from others and gain inspiration and arrive at a completely unexpected answer. And so I appreciate those different perspectives. And I think I have tried with Panka to do the same, where I look at our employees through this holistic lens, where I want to create a true community. You know, people always say like, oh, it's advertising. You're not curing cancer. No, but we are where people are spending the majority of their time and days during the week. And I want them to have a sense of pride and accomplishment and know that when life hits you, and it always does, that you have somebody empathetic that you can go to and talk to and will respond and understand and support you.
Yeah. And I just want to hit too. We are not curing cancer, but this is a really powerful industry. And I think, you know, sometimes we forget the role of media and in shaping lots of mindsets, so many mindsets. So it is really powerful what we're doing. Okay. So Kate, I know you as a child, advertising was very much in your daily life. You were aware of advertising, but what about you, Susan? You came up more through copywriting. Was it more creativity for you as a child more than advertising? When did advertising start to show up in your life?
Yeah, you know, it was. I was a writer when I was a kid. I would just fill notebooks upon notebooks of like stories. And I also had a huge passion for like video cameras and photography and documenting things. I loved stories. And I think I love to write them. I like to document them. I like to be, you know, in the throes of like character development, essentially, whether they were real or part of our imagination. And when I was about a sophomore in college, I was having a Christmas dinner with our extended family. My uncle was a creative director back in the day, art side at Doner. And he said to me, he's like, have you ever thought about copywriting? You'd be an amazing copywriter. And I said, you mean the people who write the Circle C 1994 at the bottom of a thing? And I was like, that sounds horrible. So then he told me how to spell
it. Very limiting.
Exactly. I was like, I think I've got bigger shoes to fill, Uncle Steve. And I said, no. And then I was going to Michigan State at the time. It took me no time to change my major or expand my major from just an English major to now an English and advertising major. And I dove in and I absolutely fell in love with writing for commerce. I think is not a bad, advertising is not a dirty word, you know, and I think that people who are doing it for their own fame are in it for the wrong reasons. It's like we should be doing work on service of our brands or on service of causes that we have an opportunity to affect. And I just feel really, really fortunate to have come into it that way.
That's great. Okay, Kate, take us through your career in advertising and maybe hit on some of your favorite moments and places along your journey.
I actually tried not to go into advertising. So I wanted to be a journalist. I wanted to go into politics. I started, my first job out of college was in post-production as a runner for an editorial house. I went into PR. But as you said, I was surrounded by it, right? My parents, my stepfather, my godparents, my uncle, like it was just what I knew. And so I was always sort of drawn to it. And when I first got my first job at the agency, I actually had to take a couple of steps back in terms of title, but I knew that was what I wanted to do. And for me, it's always been this combination of the creative and the production side. And I think that was sort of my entry point. I loved production. I loved going on production. I loved seeing the ideas come to life. As I grew in my career, it became more the psychology behind it and sort of understanding motivations and thinking about, and it wasn't just about consumers, it was about clients and it was about internal team members and seeing how it all came together. So I would say the big moments for me when I was at McGarry Bowen, you know, and had the chance to work on Disney, which was a brand that I loved as a kid. I'm still a huge fan. And all of a sudden it was like, wow, you are working on one of arguably the most powerful brands in the world. And you get to be a part of that storytelling. And I remember people say to me, what's one of your favorite campaigns you've ever worked on? It was the Princess campaign. It was when Disney first decided that they wanted to reposition the princesses. And we started to talk about inner beauty and did a campaign. And we brought in, you know, the chief creative officer's 11-year-old daughter to record the voiceover that was all about, I am a princess and this is what, I'm strong and I'm kind and I'm smart. And it felt like a tipping point. So from there, I went to work for The Onion, which yes, I went to The Onion and it was as much fun as you can imagine. And I was working with Susan's wife, which to get to our interesting career paths. So Susan and I had worked together at McGarry, and then I went to work for her wife at The Onion. I was there for 3 years. I laughed every single day. And then I didn't want to go back to an agency. I had sort of tasted a different side of marketing, and there was a freedom to it that I really enjoyed. I think in my personal life, I was now a mom and I felt like I needed a little more autonomy and control over my own schedule, to be honest, so that I could focus on my family and on young children. And so an opportunity came up to become a marketing consultant. I had no idea what a marketing consultant did. I'm still not sure I know what a marketing consultant does, but it was done through the lens of creative excellence, right? So it was, how do brands organize themselves, their beliefs, their evaluation systems in search of creative excellence, which felt like a really big aspiration. And I loved working with those Fortune 500 CMOs and leaders who actually made that a priority and were investing in that. So I did that all during the pandemic when I got a phone call from Susan, and she knew I had no interest in going back to an agency. And she said, "No, you don't want to work at one, but what do you think about leading one?" And I will be honest, Christy, I had never given any thought. And I told her as much. I said, "Are you sure you have the right person? Like, you know me, this isn't who I am." But we got to talking. And I think that the thing about Susan and me is we share a lot of the same values. You know, we come at things very differently, which I think is sort of the beautiful yin and yang. But at the end of the day, what we see as success is so closely aligned that it just made sense. And so that's how I wound up in Ponca.
Awesome. Susan, let's hear your side of this. So you've been at some of the biggest agencies, Ogilvy, FCB, Chicago, also McGarry Bowen, where you were.
Also McGarry Bowen. Yeah. I mean, I like to say I moved to Chicago with a portfolio and a dream to become a copywriter and to go work at those big agencies. And I felt really, I feel really fortunate that I was able to do that for 20 plus years. And I never looked at it like, oh gosh, I got to get out of this. I hate this. Like, this is such a grind. Of course, this was all pre-pandemic. So things were a little bit more 24/7. You were in an office. The expectations were there 5 days a week and a lot of late nights, and you went on production on weekends and all those things. But I loved it. Where I think there was a bit of a sea change is when I became a mom. So I became a mom, and there, you know, it was just a little bit harder. It was harder to swallow some of the patriarchal expectations of, well, yes, we're having a 5:30 meeting. And well, why can't everybody make it? And it started to kind of, you know, just kind of peck away at I think my subconscious at the time, and saying, gosh, do I want to continue to do this? You know, I was very involved in the 3% movement and the whole see it, be it. And I really felt it was important to continue showing younger creatives that it was possible to be a mom and a creative director. Like, you don't have to just go freelance. You don't have to just quit. I was like, and again, it wasn't an obligation. I really loved what I was doing.
Yeah.
But in 2019, I was approached by an independent German agency that I had never heard of called Ponca, based out of Hamburg. And they said, we are looking to open our first North American office, but we're just not looking for a CCO. We want someone to actually be an owner of this. And I was like, oh, wow. Well, this is different. You know, you start asking questions, and I got excited because, as I told Kate when I was wooing her to come over to Ponca, I said, you know, I really want to build the agency that I've always wanted to work at. You know, I wanted to build that culture. And I, you know, there has to be a little bit of a better way. We don't need as many bodies in the room. We don't need as many egos in the room, all those things. So we opened our doors in 2020. It was hard. It was hard because of the pandemic, but it was so hard because I think I didn't know what I didn't know. And the finances and looking at a P&L for the first time in my life and being like, what? I have to know how many people we can hire and how much we can pay and how much benefits cost and how to open a 401k. It was hard. It was really hard. I had a lot of help. So it's not like it was a me show alone. We had a lot of great help as well. But then in 2022, I knew that I needed a co-partner that could really help take Ponca to the next level, to be able to really secure and win new business. And we were fortunate enough to have a retainer piece of business when we opened our doors. And it was really important to make sure my partner engaged with them and brought value to that strategic relationship every day. So yes, Kate was my dream call. Julie, my wife, and I were talking because obviously Kate worked with her. And we both said, gosh, if you could get Kate Black, like everything. And I was like, yes, if I can't do it with her, I can't do it with anybody. So I was fortunate enough that Kate not only took my call, but here we are. So that is the story of the unconventional story of Ponca.
That's a great story. Okay. Two questions. First, Susan, you've written that coming from the creative side, you feel like creatives, and I've heard this a number of times in these conversations, that creatives often aren't exposed to the business side, and they don't really feel prepared to run or own an agency. And I love that you said, let's fight to not only learn how to run an agency, but also let's not be afraid when we are at the top to share the specifics with anyone with the interest or aptitude. I love that.
Yeah, 100%. You know, I think I worked with a lot of well-meaning account people that were like, oh, we're going to talk about the scope. Don't worry. We don't want to waste your time. And, you know, and at the time you're like, no, I can handle this. Like, I actually want to know what a profit margin is and what we should be aiming for. And I think now it is really, again, it's important that as a woman and a creative owner, that we are sharing the numbers and not all the specifics, obviously, but why you're making business decisions, like why you can spend here, but can't spend there, why you can make a hire or not. So I think it's really important to be as transparent as possible. Obviously it's not a completely open book. But you know, you can't learn how to do something if someone doesn't, number one, give you exposure to it and then sit down with you. And you have to be, I think, have the humility to ask dumb questions. Mm-hmm. You know, you have to say like, how does this work? And I think that's really, and you know, even coming up as a creative, I always joked like, gosh, how am I going to ever go on my first production? I don't know what all these terms even mean. And I think it's really, like to inspire my team and encourage them to ask questions, and whether it's about finances or the process and how something works, because creatives are often protected from the leadership conversations that can catapult their career from being a senior writer to a creative director. If suddenly you're more responsible for the business side of it. And oftentimes that's your client's business. If you know how to talk in a room and say, hey, hold on. If you're trying to get awareness, let's do this. If you're trying to get conversion, let's do that. Suddenly now they're like, oh, this isn't just a writer. She's a leader. Right. So whether or not a creative wants to own their own agency or not, I think really, you know, recognizing the multiple sides of it is really important. And I think we're just the way you think about in school, you know, there's this, oh, are you right brain or are you left brain? It's like, no, we are all both.
Yeah,
we're all both.
Right.
And just because you might have an interest in art doesn't mean you are inept at adding two numbers together. Like, guys, this is not, you know, we're not doing calc-based derivatives. We're like adding numbers and subtracting things. Like we all have the capacity for that. So I like to encourage and inspire women and creatives, especially women creatives, that they can do it.
Okay. I want to talk about capacity and being able to do both, because you both hit on this point in your career where you felt like, I want to be a mom, and I don't know how to do that in this business. And I was having a conversation with somebody else up in Chicago, Clive Serkin. He was on Brandside, but also agency for many years. And I was telling him, I don't think people are understanding that ownership is actually a solution to that. Mm-hmm. Right? Like, if you don't feel like you can do that where you are, ownership is a way out. You, with ownership, you get to set the table. Like you said, you get to create what you want that to be, right? And it can be as big or as small. It gets to be what you want it to be.
Yep. I totally agree. And, you know, I think there's a difference between saying it and doing it. And I think that there are plenty of people in leadership positions who say, no, your personal life, you know, you need to prioritize, take the time you need, but then you watch their behavior and they are making sacrifices or trade-offs or decisions. And particularly as a junior person, you feel like, okay, but I'm going to get in trouble if I don't do what they're doing and follow that lead, or am I making a mistake, or am I? And so I think that recognizing that people aren't just listening to you, but they're watching you. And that if you set the boundaries that you are telling others to do, they're going to feel more comfortable doing it. And that 100% starts at the top. But you are right. And I've talked with a lot of female colleagues about this. And that was one of the benefits of being in consulting, because you were sort of on an island of one. And so you were beholden to your own expectations and could do what you want. And it was true moving into the leadership position. We could together determine, hey, this is where we're going to draw the line. This is what I need in order to be successful and happy and build. And I think we've done it without in any way jeopardizing our client's business. Mm-hmm. I mean, we've really been able to do both. However, it is still hard. And it's hard all the time, you know? And we were talking with our head of strategy. It is, there are some days where I feel like, man, I really did not do a good job at work today. And there are some days where I think I am really not doing the good mom job today. But the next morning you wake up and you try again. And that's the best you can do.
Yeah. One of the things that I have recently come to be able to verbalize is balance for me is not this like being perfectly perched, right? Like sitting so perfectly between the two, between motherhood and leadership here. It is for me what that looks like, and really good balance is understanding and being able to discern when do I need to be more in on what side, right? And it's okay. Like, so I don't get upset those days that I really need to be more in over here, because I understand that there's going to be days that I'm going to need to be way in and more, you know, in over here. And going back and forth, that's really where I find the balance.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's true for you guys.
I think it's true. I think for me, it's also been accepting that I can't be great at everything all at once. And sort of being okay with not giving 100% on something and recognizing that this wasn't going to be a gold star day or whatever it is. And also being really transparent with that. Some might say too transparent, but you know, Susan always says to me, you've got to give yourself grace. And I think that I'm a very transparent person. I'm very honest. I wear my heart on my sleeve, and being able to say like, feeling really insecure right now, or I'm very unsure about this. Can we bat this around? Will you workshop this with me? And sort of, Susan, what you were saying at the beginning about not pretending to have all the answers and being really open about when you need help and when you need clarification, and not seeing that as a weakness, but more as an expectation so that you can succeed, has been really important to me.
Well, okay, let's dive into that just a little bit. For each of you, Susan, given your conversation, I guess, given what you were saying about creatives not feeling as prepared, I imagine that there were a lot of expected challenges, but I'm curious, what were the unexpected challenges?
I mean,
in stepping into ownership?
Everything. I mean, I joke that I do jobs that are 5 levels beneath me every day and, you know, 500 levels above me. Like, I had no idea I would be writing, you know, or working with a legal team on, you know, the operating agreement for our limited partnership, or figuring out how to have a 401k vesting model that makes sense and has enough safe harbor and all the finances and things like that. So I think it was all more challenging. I think, thankfully, I went in with the naivete that I was going to just be a creative, and I always thought I had business sense, so I'd be fine. And I was, and I am, and that's okay. But there was a huge steep learning curve along the way. It was all those things. I remember vividly opening the P&L for the first time and like understanding how much money we had coming in, and we had to decide who we were hiring and what insurance plans we were going to offer, and being like, I don't know what I should be aiming for. So it was challenging. I remember, you know, Googling a lot of terms where you're like, okay, what's EBITDA? You know, like I didn't know. And a lot of creatives don't know, but you learn as you go and you ask questions. And I think that if we recognize in our creatives and in everyone that, you know, this is not, the work itself is not, it's not out of reach of anyone. You know, anyone can do this. You just need to ask the right questions and then hire the right people. I always say that you're only as good as the people you hire. That was me knowing I needed to hire Kate. That was Kate and I recognizing like we needed a darn good accounting firm that wasn't a one-person show that didn't have all the answers. We knew we needed something better. So a lot of it is knowing what you don't know and then trying to hire or, you know, get help in those areas.
What about you? What have been the expected or unexpected challenges that others can learn from?
The biggest challenge for me has been and continues to be, honestly, the financial balance of where you are and where you want to be. So the realities of what you can afford to invest in your people and in your agency and in your growth but the aspirations and the culture that you want to create? Like, how do you find that balance? How do you keep people motivated while you're sort of working through those kinks, trying to win new business? Because, you know, our team, they work so hard. They are so smart. I would love to be able to reward them all the way they deserve it. It's not where we are as a business. And I think that goes back. And those were things that even when I was on the agency side, I didn't fully recognize. You know, you're so focused on yourself and your own financial situation and your own work-life balance that you don't fully appreciate the broader picture. And that's really what being in this role. And granted, it's a small agency, but still, like, Susan and I are responsible for 8 other people and their, you know, quality of life and their professional advancement. We take that really seriously. Mm-hmm. But that's been the hardest part for me personally.
Yeah, it is a responsibility and it is really hard work. Yeah. It's also really rewarding, as you said, for so many ways, for yourself, for them, you know, to be able to establish and create an environment for them that's different, that's better, for your family too. Why do you think that we have so few female agency owners in this business compared to other businesses?
I think a lot of it is legacy and sort of the way the industry was built and who has been promoted into certain roles. I think some of it is probably expectations around what is possible and sort of allowing yourself to be pigeonholed into a certain professional track. I think a lot of it is opportunity. I mean, I do not take for granted that this German entity decided to invest in us and give us this opportunity, that we have this wonderful client who is investing in us and in our growth. And so we've really lucked out. And Susan and I work really hard, but there's a good amount of luck that came with it too. And I think that we have embraced that with both hands and are running as fast as we can with it. But I think those opportunities just don't come along. And so it's got to be that merriment of right time, right place, and knowing when to grab it and not letting yourself be held back either by yourself or someone else.
Susan, I'm curious, how do you think it hurts? I would say both the industry, but how do you think it hurts creativity to have so few female owners?
I think it's modeling, right? It's everything from the 3% of like, okay, if you can't see the creative directors above you, you can't aspire to it. If we are not modeling that agency owners can be women, it's harder for people to imagine themselves in it. So I think the good things is there are multiple different paths to ownership. You know, I think it's interesting. It's yes, you can open your doors with 6 huge retainer clients and suddenly you're 100 people overnight. Or there's the really wonderful model that somebody says goes freelance and then their services are in such high demand that they hire and then they hire another person. And then they say, oh gosh, maybe now I need a finance person. So I think also is breaking down the stigma that you need to quit your job, steal the retainer client from your current agency and burn bridges. And, you know, there are different ways to look at ownership. And I think Kate's right. We were very fortunate to have what I would say is a unique model presented to us. And I don't think we don't take that for granted, but I'd also encourage women to think about ownership differently, that you don't need to have the 100-person agency success model in your head when you go out there and try and do something different.
Speaking of doing something different, what is that for Panka? What's your vision?
I said, and I believe before that I want to create the kind of agency that I've always wanted to work at. And that is from a culture perspective, but I would say that's also from a work perspective. I want to tell the stories and work with the brands that want people to believe in their business as much as they do. I don't think that they don't want creatives to necessarily fill awards cases, but they actually want a team to think critically about their business and say, what kind of work can we put in the marketplace that will actually move numbers, and telling those stories. I think a lot of it too is telling the stories of like unsung hero brands. So maybe the people think that like, oh gosh, I don't have enough money to have a TV spot, or I don't have enough money to have an agency. I think there's so many great entrepreneurial businesses out there right now who are getting started, and there's like the wildly success stories that you hear that, you know, people have all these venture capitalist investments overnight. And then there's the unsung brand stories that just need to kind of be harnessed and focused, bring the strategic thinking to them, and then bring that outward, you know, creative message to the marketplace, whatever it is. That excites me. Of course, we'd love to work for, as Kate and I joke, Disney, or we'd love to work for Coca-Cola. Maybe that'll happen someday, but I get so much joy out of, you know, telling the smaller stories that maybe everybody doesn't know. We've got a couple of smaller clients that are like extremely rewarding because they look at the work and the thinking that you bring to the table, and they're extremely appreciative, and you are part of their business model, ideally from very early on. So that's a wonderful place to be too, in terms of a relationship perspective, as we look to grow the agency. Mm-hmm.
Okay. What advice do you have for those who will follow you and us into this position?
Mine is, don't worry if you cry for the first month, it gets easier. It's a big decision. It's a big decision. There are risks. It is so rewarding. It's our own way to give back and create something better. You know, that's our opportunity. And if I think about Ponca, I believe that what sits at our center is this feeling of empathy. Right. We talk about insight all the time in this industry, but I think that there is a taking that a step further of empathy, of being empathetic to our clients, to consumers, to our coworkers, to our outside partners, really taking into consideration biases and myths and motivations and needs, and how do you pull that all together and do something that everyone can rally around and be really proud of. And so I hope that those are the types of opportunities, and that we're showing, you know, future women leaders that you can create that culture, and that you can create that role for yourself.
Mm-hmm. Yes, you can. Yes, we can. Thank you both. This has been such a beautiful conversation.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Own It with Kate Black and Susan Betteridge from Ponca. You can find links to their LinkedIn profiles and the agency's website in our show notes at untilyouownit.com. If you're enjoying Own It, please find it on your favorite podcast app and drop us a rating and a review. Those help more people discover the show and join our community. Also, if you're a female or non-binary agency owner, or you want to own an agency someday, join our growing community at that same address, untilyouownit.com. I'm Christy Heiler. We'll talk again soon on Own It.
This podcast is heard along the Marketing Podcast Network. For more great marketing podcasts, visit marketingpodcasts.net.